welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 132. That is Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Connor, what is up?
Evan, doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. It is end of January, which means it's almost February, which means it's almost March, and then April, and nice weather, and
the playoffs. Works.
That is how a calendar works. I just figured it out. But nonetheless, we are finishing up January, and to finish up January, the Bruins in Tampa Bay on Thursday night. Tough loss, 3-2. Big game, exciting game, very exciting game. Good third period, except for the first minute when Charlie McAvoy went flying into the boards. Thought, oh, that's another couple months with the shoulder. And then the Lightning scored, like, right after. And then McAvoy came back, ended up tying the game. Then they ended up losing. I've seen a bunch of different takes on Twitter. Again, I don't think people are used to the Bruins losing. So I think, you know, some people it's level red when they lose. Some people it's, hey, it's not as big a deal as they're making it out to be. Where do you fall in that debate?
Yeah, I'm not really stressing over a loss to a very good Tampa Bay team, right? I mean, again, you look at how much has gone right for this team. These losses, they happen. They're inevitable, especially on the road against a Tampa team that I think has now won 11 straight on home ice. Again, it'd be one thing if the Bruins are, you know, getting blown out of a game 5-0, 6-0, which at this point, I still feel like you shouldn't hit the panic button anyway, because they are still, what, 38-6-4, 38-6-5, whatever the actual bad. Record is. But for a game like that, you can even point to the fact that, you know, some really bad D-zone lapses that can and should be corrected. You look at, you know, the face-off that led to Kucherov's goal, which Krejci had a legitimate gripe with in terms of the ref not calling some of that stuff and leads to that, you know, bang-bang play right there. I would consider the Bruins played a tough competitive game against a team that, again, has been to the Stanley Cup final 3 years in a row. Like, you can talk about Tampa and the fact they've lost a whole bunch of depth and what have you, but they've still got a very good core. They know how to win. They know how to grind through games. And you've got Andrei Vasilevskiy, where I think that game showed you again why, even though the Bruins might be a wagon, don't want to play a team like that, like that has a guy like Vasilevskiy, who, if he's locked in, can swing the momentum of a 7-game series and win them a series or two or three. Like, that's how good he can be when he's on his game. So, but again, losses happen. Should not be panicking over it. Good competitive game. The Bruins drop 5-6 in a row, and the details of the game are really slipping, and they're losing games that they shouldn't. Then you raise some, you know, level of concern, dropping a back and forth game to Tampa in their own building. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, I don't think this is the biggest deal in the world. Again, I think as you said, it's one game. Tampa's very good. I know Tampa is still not the Tampa of the past couple of years. And I know, you know, it's a hot debate of, you know, do you want Toronto? Do you want Tampa? Ultimately, hopefully those two teams play each other in the first round and, you know, knock each other out. But Tampa's still Tampa. And I think that's the thing. Like, the core is still there. Vasilevskiy is still nasty in net. Are they going to go back to the Cup final? Most likely not, but we've been saying that for the last 2 years now. So maybe, you know, who knows? But at the same time, again, I just look at that team and think that's still a really good freaking team. John Cooper's still the head coach. Like, you know, they've lost depth pieces, sure, but they still find ways to make up for that. And I think, again, you see in a game, you know, I think if the Bruins Lightning are playing in a series, I think the Bruins are favored. But I think the Lightning put up a real fight in a 7-game series, as they have been for the past couple of years. We'll get into the Toronto and Tampa stuff in a second. One thing, though, that I've seen a lot of on Twitter, and I know we shouldn't be basing topics off of Twitter, but here we are. Brandon Carlo got a lot of hate last night. Missed assignment out front, killing the penalty when Tampa scored their first goal. Ran into Ullmark on that third goal. Little Keystone Cops. With the deadline coming, I think I've heard a lot of people say, oh, you know, they should consider trading Carlo, you know. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't really know if I want to be dealing off a very good shutdown right shot defenseman who's in your top four, because if you lose him on that right side, if you're trading Carlo, you're most likely getting like a forward back. I don't know like who's doing a right shot for right shot defenseman swap. So let's say, in theory, let's say you put Carlo in a package to Vancouver for Horvat. Let's just say, right? And you get back Horvat and maybe like a prospect. Your right side on D is barren with after McAvoy and Clifton. So again, I don't understand, you know, I get that Carlo sometimes does not hit the expectation that, you know, we expect for him. But at the same time, like, he's had a fairly good season.
Yeah, no, and it's something where I think when Kahlo does have a bad game, it gets put under kind of a microscope, right? Because he's got a day-to-day role on this team that really isn't exactly glamorous, right? It's usually just PK work, snuffing out scoring plays, what have you. Also means he spends a lot of his shifts in the defensive zone. So you're already kind of up against it in terms of trying to snuff out those chances. Sometimes stuff goes sideways, right? Again, that was, I think, probably Brandon Kahlo would be the first to say that wasn't his best game, but I also don't think you can, you know, it comes with the territory, right, that these guys, especially stay-at-home defensive defensemen, have a rough day at the office and people are ready to ship them out of town. As you said, I think you look at the depth of this team on the right side. You need a guy like Brandon Kahlo. And again, as you said, this isn't like, you know, weeks of like substandard play. I think after coming back from that early concussion, he's been playing pretty well. Like, you know, I think you even see, especially once you get to the playoffs, guys like that that step up. And even if they aren't capturing headlines, they're not one of the top three stars in the game, you see where that value is. I think you look at, you know, Derek Forbert's a guy that had a pretty, you know, up and down regular season last year, put himself in favorable position off of his play in the postseason. And I think Brandon Kahlo is a guy that you even look at that Islanders series in 2021, right? Brandon Kahlo goes down, all of a sudden the defense just crumbles. Like, for all that people will point out the warts in his game in terms of a missed, you know, D-zone read or what have you, everything else that he does right over the 20-plus minutes that he logs night in and night out on the PK, the simple, smart plays, just that stability that he brings to the decor, losing him for any sense of time, or if you're trading him, for example, leaves like a vacancy that just makes it that much harder for the Bruins in terms of having the ability to, you know, penciling the lineup without worrying about stuff. You look at how much David Krejci and these guys help. It's not just the fact that the production's there. It's, you know, Jim Montgomery doesn't have to toggle pieces around to see what fits. You know, you have a 1-2-3 down the middle with Bergeron, Krejci, and Coyle. You know what a guy like Zaka brings, that you don't have to really augment your lineup that much. Like, just having that stability with these players is what brings their real value out there. So for Kahlo, it's, you know, you look at these rough outings he's had lately, still shouldn't mask his overall, you know, importance to this team and where his role should expand as we get further and further into the season and into the playoffs.
And as you touched on, like, you don't notice when Carlo's making good plays because it's not like, you know, Charlie McAvoy dangling through defense, yeah, or Lindholm dangling. It's simple plays. It's just, you know, breaking up a pass or covering someone out front, taking away a passing lane, things that don't just, you know, jump off the screen. They don't catch your eye immediately. But when you go back and watch the film and kind of watch him closely, you notice, oh, okay, he makes a huge impact in the D zone. It really stabilizes things on defense. Kind of hits it a bigger point. I think when people mention, you know, trading players off the current roster, it's kind of like Don Sweeney's playing a game at Jenga, where, like, you know, you're hoping you can pull a piece out and the whole thing doesn't collapse. Feels like if you pulled Kahlo out, there's a chance that Jenga tower collapses. And I think that's not a really safe bet you want to make, Connor. It's not a really safe bet. But when we're talking about really safe bets, we're talking about our good friends over at Bet Online.
Right you are, Evan. Listen up, guys. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your bet needs and sports info. Over at Bet Online, you can still find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, the latest fighting news, NFL bets, and yes, with the NHL back, even more wagers and odds. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's promo code CLNS50. BetOnline, where the game starts.
So games starting, Toronto and Tampa in the first round. Feels like they're on a collision course for that first round matchup. And I think that helps. I mean, I know you agree with me on this. This helps the Bruins a lot. Let those two teams battle it out in the first round. It's interesting because, you know, at some point, we've said this for a long time. I've been saying this, I think, since like 2019. At some point, Toronto has to get past the first round. You'd have to think, right? Tampa is not an easy out by any means. Yeah, and they maybe not be as good as last year. Victor Hedman, the Jay Fresh card I don't know if you saw this. Yeah. Victor Hedman's even strength defense is in like the 7th percentile. Offense is fine. Everything else is fine. But that even strength defense, oof, tough. Still, though, I think that is a must-watch first-round series if that comes to fruition. It helps the Bruins in the sense, as I said, that they can kind of beat each other up.
Yeah, no, it's key. I think you look at the pace of the Bruins run. Yes, it's record-setting pace, but as much as it looks like the Bruins are running away with it, they still need to keep up this momentum because, again, Toronto is, what is it now, 11 points, 12 points behind them. But still, you want to make sure you're well and clear of them because you want to set up that meeting with Toronto and Tampa and have those two teams kind of beat the crap out of each other in the first round, right? You look at just where the Bruins are going to have – take your pick, right? Pittsburgh, Washington, one of these other teams, Islanders – won't be easy, right? Yeah, as it rarely Buffalo. Ever is. Yeah, rarely is. Oh my God, can you imagine? You know, they'll have their hands full with whoever they play, as good as the Bruins are. But if you're charting out a course, it's almost like, again, you don't want to plan too far ahead in something as variable as the Stanley Cup playoffs. But it's like in 2019, right? You look at the path and you see paths clearing for your team. You last thing you want to do is make things harder for yourself for an already tournament that's the hardest to win in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So if you're able to get in the first round and play a team that you can and should beat, and meanwhile Toronto and Tampa Bay go through a 7-game slugfest, best case scenario, because whoever you're playing out of that series is going to be up against it, right? You mean, you look at just even the way Tampa plays, we look at their skill, we look at how good Vasilevsky is, and that enough is, you know, enough to give teams a handful over a 7-game series, but they just know how to win. They know how to grind out games. They've got guys like Maroon and Perry who can land some welts against you. It's just a team that is built to win in the postseason. And if they don't win, they're going to grind you to a halt throughout that series. It's not going to be easy. If Toronto finally gets over the hump, that's going to come at a price, right? In terms of just what it's going to take to topple Tampa. So if you're the Bruins, yes, they're focused on their own game. They're still, you know, in first place with a very comfortable lead. But in terms of making things easier, something you have to be cognizant about, that if you're able to lock in a Toronto-Tampa series, all of a sudden you can chart a little bit of a path through a very, very, very competitive Eastern Conference.
And you also don't have to play both of them. That's the big one.
Also great. Yeah.
That's why if the Bruins somehow kind of, I don't want to say collapse, but they lag behind a little bit, finish in second or third, they play either Tampa or Toronto and then have to face Tampa or Toronto in the second round. That's not great. So I think it is it's a good thing that they're in first place. They should continue to win. So they avoid both of those teams. One thing that will help them continue to win is getting Jake DeBrusk back, who Jim Montgomery recently said is back skating and testing things out. I think you're seeing in the past couple of games, they're kind of trying new pieces up on that top line, you know, Craig Smith, Taylor Hall. And that's all great. You know, Taylor Hall with Marchand and Bergeron looks awesome on paper, but I think it's helpful when you can have Taylor Hall on that third line. I think that is a big role in having the depth and just kind of having DeBrusk there back. I mean, do you think there's a chance when he comes back that he kind of continues at the pace that he was at prior to going down?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something where you have to look at, it's a chart out coming back from a broken bone in your leg, right? A little bit tough to just kind of shake off that rust and get back out there.
Get back out, rub some dirt on it, kid. Get on out there.
Yeah, I'm not dropping any wild takes there with that. But I think you look at just the way DeBrusk was playing leading up to this. And again, we always talk about, I think, when DeBrusk is on a heater, or he's playing very well. It's not like he's a vastly different player. His game or his play style is like he plays like a guy that is conducive to getting steady production. That's why sometimes it's so puzzling when he goes through those peaks and valleys, because he drives to the net, goes into grade A ice, knows how to tip pucks, you know, is cleans up rebounds. Like, he's a guy that you see the way he plays and his style, and it paints a picture of a guy that should be getting 25 plus goals a season. And I think you're seeing that. So if he just goes back to what his, you know, bread and butter is in terms of his style of play, and he's most likely going to be back in the top six, I think the goals are going to be there. And I think you've seen over the last couple of games, granted, Bruins are what, 8-2, 9-2 since DeBrusk has been out. So they're doing just fine. But I think you do see in these games where they have come up short, whether it's Seattle or Tampa, where a guy like DeBrusk, you know, can make that extra difference in terms of just being that added scoring punch in the top six. When you need a goal off of a rebound or a tip or something like that. That's going to be a greasy goal where the team's packing it in, guy like Vasilevsky's in net or what have you. That's, I think, where DeBrusk shows his value of getting those timely goals. You saw that up in the bubble when the Bruins beat Carolina, where some of those games were tight and he kind of broke these games open. So Bruins have plenty of depth, but getting DeBrusk back in short order would be huge for this team. Though, be curious to see what exactly they do, because he's scheduled to be cleared by this upcoming week. So he's in play for Sunday in Carolina, maybe Wednesday in Toronto. But with the All-Star break coming up as well, with 9 days off, maybe it's we got a little bit of a cushion here. Let's not rush him back when we've got 9 days on the horizon. So
yeah, I don't see why you would go to rushing him back when you have that big All-Star break and can kind of let him rehab a little bit. And moving on, in net, Jeremy Swayman, again, I mean, you know, has been playing terrific of late, was good up in Montreal earlier this week, doesn't get the game against Tampa. You have big tests coming up. Throw him in there. Throw him in there. And again, you know, Linus Olmark is still Linus Olmark. But as we've said multiple times throughout the season, like, Swayman is, you have to wait for Swayman to hit his groove. All right, he's hit his groove. Let him take, I don't want to say the majority of reps, but most of the reps over the next, you know, few weeks. You know, give Olmark a little bit of a rest and let Swayman get in there. Because it seems like he's really found his groove. I know, wasn't it like both of them were goalies of the week or something?
I think Swayman had like a 0.49 goal again. I think Olmark was like 0.51. It was some like video game.
Incredible. But this is a real chance for Swayman.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a luxury for the Bruins where, again, you even look at the game against Tampa Bay. Olmark was right there with Vasilevsky in terms of how many grade A stops he was turning aside. So it's not like Olmark's game is slipping, but you're in a spot now if you're the Bruins where not only are you able to give Olmark some rest. And, you know, I think people project out that I think Olmark's in line for about 55 stops right now. So he's at least below that 60 stop threshold that you don't want to, I think, cross anymore. I looked up before that I think the last goalie to win a cup with 60 plus stops in a season was Fleury in 09. So days of that happening are, yeah.
Even Tim Thomas wasn't even in that in 2011.
I don't believe so. No. Interesting. So, yeah. So, but I think you look at the way those games are kind of set up. If you're able to give Swayman a bigger run here, not only does it benefit Olmark in terms of giving him some more rest and keeping him fresh as a guy whose previous career high in game started was 41 in the season last year, it gets Swayman feeling confident as well, right? Like, it's a good problem. Like, you look ahead to the postseason. Yes, Olmark, barring something going haywire, is going to be your number one goalie. Also, you should have a pretty confident backup option there in Swayman. If Swayman ends the year with like a 9.22 save percentage in a backup role, it's pretty damn good, right, for what he brings. Not only, you know, you can look at the long term of having Swayman feeling confident and having that, you know, kind of two headed monster in place for the next couple of years in net, but getting Swayman back on track has to be huge for this team and the long term outlook of, you know, it's not like it's just the Olmark show. Like, yes, Olmark right now is still playing great in the running for the Vezina, of course, but it's not like a situation where there's a humongous gap between the two of them if Swayman keeps on playing like this. So great problem to have for you, the Bruins, but yes, I agree. I think it doesn't have to be 60, you know, it doesn't have to be 75, 25 or what have you, but if Swayman can get a couple more starts here down the road, I think it should benefit all parties moving forward.
And it even kind of readies him for the playoffs too. I mean, again, I don't think Montgomery wants to, you know, flip-flop with both of them in the playoffs, but, you know, Olmark isn't playing well. Having Swayman there as a backup that can go in and potentially be a starter, I think makes a big difference. And we've seen that with the Islanders in past seasons and other teams as well. So interesting stuff all around. Lots of good games coming up. Carolina, Florida. You, I imagine, will have everybody covered at Boston.com. What can people look forward to from you over there?
Yeah, we'll have you covered every step of the way with Bruins news, features, columns, all that fun stuff over at Boston.com. Of course, we cover everything that's happening in the Boston sports scene. So I also have stuff on the Celtics, Patriots, Red Sox, all that good stuff. So you can find all my work over there, Boston.com. So please read over there. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. That's Connor Ryan, Evan Marinofsky, Poke the Bear listeners. Have a great rest of your week.